project instructor at UW Parkside, and Jane Herring, a former marketing manager at Gateway Technical College. Community Matters shares its time slot with the WGTD Radio Theater. And now, here's today's program.
Good morning, and welcome to Community Matters. I'm your host today, Laura Sumner Kuhn, and I'm excited to introduce Ashley Cedeno, who is the Racine Public Library's first social worker. She joins me today to talk about her job at the library and what work she has accomplished so far since she's been there since September. So this morning, I welcome Ashley. Welcome to be with us, Ashley.
Thank you so much for having me, Laura.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yeah, so I mean, as you mentioned, my name is Ashley Cedeno. I am the first full-time social worker here at the Racine Public Library. I am originally from a small town in like close to Southside Chicago called Blue Island. And I came to Wisconsin to pursue my undergraduate career around 2015 at Carthage College. And I got my undergraduate degree in social work. And then I also got my master's degree at the University of Wisconsin. University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. And then right after receiving my master's, I was able to get this job, and it's the dream job that I never knew I had. So I really do have a passion for making an inclusive space for all and providing services to those who need them. And that's exactly what this role is. So I couldn't be happier to be here.
That's fabulous. Why don't you tell us a little bit about this role? You're being the first full-time social worker, I imagine you have a little liberty to kind of carve out what it is that you see are the needs in the community and how this role can respond to them. So why don't you describe a little bit about what you do and how you go about doing it?
Yeah, so you actually explained it exactly how I would have explained it. So being the first full-time social worker here has, it gives me the opportunity to really shape the role as I go and create the role. And so that is both exciting, but it also comes with its challenges. But I do think that a big part of that is really seeing what resources and opportunities are available in the community so that when patrons do come into the library needing those resources, I'm able to refer them to the resources that they need. And building connections and networking is also a really big part of the job. But it's also very human-centered, right? It's person-centered and making those connections with people that come in with needs, seeing them as a full person that they are and not as their problems, and trying to get to the root of what it is that they need and getting their needs met that way. So with this role, it's a lot of community building, it's a lot of network, relationship building, and it's also a lot of background work of, you know, building the role as I go. And I'm also part of the leadership team, so helping with revisions of policies with the social justice lens, and also have the liberty to do meaningful programming. So it's a little bit of everything, and it's been really, really fun so far.
In your encounters with patrons, Ashley, without revealing any kind of confidences, could you give us an understanding of what kinds of needs patrons come to the library having, and maybe some examples of what you've been able to do so far?
Yeah, definitely. So you'd be surprised. I mean, people of all walks of life, of all different types of backgrounds come into the library, some of them knowing that there's a social worker here and they have an appointment with me, and a lot of them don't even know that there's a social worker here. And based on their needs and questions to the staff, they come and refer them to me. And so a lot of those needs, the highest amount of concerns that I've gotten is around housing and financial stability, applying for benefits. And then there's also people that come in just needing mental health support, emotional support, connecting them to resources like shelter, food, clothing. And then, you know, sometimes we also get sexual abuse survivors, domestic violence survivors, really of all backgrounds, even just helping people apply for jobs, you know, employment related things. And so really the possibilities are endless. And I've had the opportunity to help people with a myriad of needs that they have.
When it comes to housing, this is a rising area all around the country. First of all, the cost of housing and the availability of housing, particularly rental housing, has become astronomical. I know that there has been some studies released just this spring talking about how incredibly high, incredibly high percentage of your monthly income for somebody, the cost of housing is. In some cases, and in some states, I think it was Florida that topped 60% of earnings in a month to cover general and average housing cost, rental housing cost. How do you, when somebody comes to you with housing needs, and I know that the city, you're a city employee, the city also has a department that helps work with some of those housing needs. How do you interface with that? And what have you been finding? What in any of your work have you found to be like the average cost of housing or the average need of somebody who's looking for a place to rent? What are you seeing?
Yeah, so I think that brings up an interesting point. And I think that on a larger scale, like on a more macro level, these are systemic issues, especially because we know too, libraries are known to be a hub for, you know, more often than not, people who are experiencing homelessness. And so when people who are experiencing homelessness come into the library to, you know, just hang out for the day, or in the summer, use it as a cooling center, or in the winter as a warming center, you run into a lot of people who, you know, come in seeking different types of information and resources. And, you know, sometimes the root is housing, but then there's also more issues like food and clothing and the, like other like mental health issues and other substance use sometimes, like the things I mentioned earlier. And so, you know, the challenge really comes when you need to be able to fulfill and meet all of those needs. And unfortunately, sometimes that isn't feasible to do so. I have found recently that has been a little bit of a challenge with people who come into the library seeking resources. And, you know, we have an appointment, we meet, they tell me their backstory and what it is that they're looking for. And sometimes I am able to, you know, give them XYZ of resources of like, these are the shelters, these are subsidized housing applications that you could fill in, these are financial resources you can apply to and call. But then sometimes those resources don't have enough resources to really fulfill the need in the community. And so it ends up being a cycle of calling one agency, refers them to another agency that refers them to another, and then they end up at square one back here. And so it is a little bit more challenging when it comes to the housing crisis right now. And I think that that's something that's weighing heavy on a lot of people in the field who are trying to help people meet that need. And so sometimes it is very discouraging and heartbreaking to hear people's stories, but it's also something that isn't just here in Racine. It's everywhere. And it's something that we're trying to, you know, brainstorm ways that we can work together as a community and build relationships so that we can all together find ways to meet these needs. And more often than not, that also comes from policies and, you know, funds available to be able to meet those needs. And so that is definitely something that has been weighing heavy, not just on me, but, you know, on other staff here at the library and the community in general.
Well, and as you mentioned, few of these issues ever come isolated by themselves, right? They're usually complex and interlocking problems that feed on each other. When somebody comes in, they, you know, the stress level of being homeless or living on the edge of financial stability, or you know, as we said, just being homeless, that has a certain kind of stress, chronic stress that somebody undergoes too. You mentioned mental health issues. We've also had a very gigantic lack of providers for decades in this area. What kind of conversations, when you say that you're also working with leadership on the policy end of things, what kinds of things are you seeing that are talked about as possible remedies to some of these issues that you face as people walk into the library? For instance, the idea of more mental health providers in the community, is that something that has come up a lot in your discussions?
Yeah, so when it comes to that, and when I mentioned, you know, on the policy level, that's when in terms of when it comes to the actual library, like our institution. And so when we're looking at, you know, revising our policies, for example, the rules of behavior policy, like what are the behaviors that are allowed and not allowed here at the library? And so when looking at that with a social justice lens, it's also coming into the terms and communicating with all of our staff members that we are here to create a welcoming and inclusive environment for everyone, no matter their background. And so with that, you know, sometimes quote unquote challenging behaviors are seen as challenging behaviors because they're either a mental health crisis that, you know, some people aren't necessarily equipped to handle properly, or just something that we deem as different or challenging. And so kind of like the move that we're going towards is creating that inclusive environment and kind of stopping ourselves to really see the person as they are. And instead of, you know, asking like, telling them you're doing this wrong, it's like, how can I help you? How can we de-escalate the situation or intervene in this crisis to help you? And maybe, you know, maybe not call the police, or maybe not make this escalate more than it should be, and instead really talking and handling it on a human level. I think that that's one of the biggest things that we can do as an institution is to have all staff kind of be on that level and that understanding that the library to a lot of people is their one safe space to be able to come and be as fully as who they are. And sometimes that includes their challenges and their issues that they're dealing with. And sometimes the staff are the people who are in the position to be able to help them to either de-escalate a situation, lend a listening ear, be able to help them. And so with that comes a lot of communicating, policy changes, and a lot of training as well with staff. And so with that, we're not expecting all of the library staff to be social workers. That's not like the goal here, but I think that the goal with having a more person-centered approach can hopefully allow more people to continue to feel welcomed and to continue to feel like the library is their safe space so that they can come here and get the resources that they need.
That's a really good point. So training also comes in under your role as well, I'm sure, as you help to coach your colleagues about how to do exactly what you've just described. So far, that's an awful lot on somebody's plate for you to deal with crises and circumstances that people bring to the library wanting help while you're probably still discovering what is here in our community that you could connect them with. So why don't you tell me about the resource part of your role and your exploration? What kind of alliances have you been able to build, or networks have you been able to build so far that you found the most helpful? And maybe you found some hidden gems among them that you could tell us a little bit more about.
Yeah, so like I said, a big part of my job is that connection building and, you know, figuring out what resources are in the community. And so I, like you mentioned at the beginning, I first started here around like the beginning of September of this past year. So I've been here for a little bit over a year, half a year. And so when I first started here, I really wanted to make it a point for me to make those relationships with different agencies. And so I would reach out to agencies and saying, you know, hey, I'm the library social worker at the Racine Public Library. I was hoping if we could meet, you know, to kind of exchange information and see what we both have to offer to make that connection. And so with those connections, now I do have a lot of solid relationships and collaborations with a lot of agencies. And so I'm able to send clients their way and they're able to send people my way too, depending on what the needs are. And so with that is the hopes of creating that network here in the community so that we can all rely on each other and not necessarily, you know, reinvent the wheel, but use each other and fall back on each other to be able to support our community members. And so with that, I mean, one of my strong relationships that I have is with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. They're very great in terms of, you know, providing that mental health support. They do support groups that are usually peer led. And so I do refer a lot of patrons to them because that's just a really good resource of having people who know and understand your struggles that you can talk with them to be able to feel supported in life. So that's a really, really good resource that a lot of patrons end up telling me that they were really glad to be referred there because they've had really great experiences there. Another really good relationship that I've built, and they also actually host certain hours of the week here at the library in one of our study rooms to meet with clients, is the Racine Financial Empowerment Center. So, I mean, they help with a ton of different type, like financial advisement, and it's all free for Racine residents. So, I mean, they help improve your credit. They help you financially plan if you want to buy a home. Like, I mean, they do a lot in terms of financial advocacy and education for Racine residents. And like I said, that's completely free, and that's an amazing resource. And I mean, the list goes on. Like, I also have a relationship with the ADRC, which is the Aging and Disability Resource Center of Racine County. And they do a lot of advocacy and providing resources to the community for people who are aging or have a disability. So they're a very good resource to go to if you have any questions regarding that, like benefits or just resources in general that you need, like with insurance and all of that good stuff. So they're also really good. And then I've also met a lot with the different shelters here in the Racine community, as well as the hospitality center. I have a really good relationship with Seth, their executive director. And they have a food pantry. I think they have, like, you know, breakfast and lunch. They also have clothing there. Like, it's just more resources for people who are experiencing homelessness or poverty or just have those needs. And it's also a really good socializing place for people who sometimes don't have that aspect in their lives. So the list goes on. There's so many people and agencies that I've had the privilege of meeting with, like the Women's Resource Center, with Advocate Aurora, just like a lot of health initiatives. And when talking about like health and food insecurity as well, I've also connected with the American Heart Association. And this is actually really exciting. So we're in like the end stages of this, but the American Heart Association reached out a few months ago. And so we wanted to collaborate to create some type of programming around health and food security in Racine County. And so what they helped us with is, you know, like with the information and research and knowledge around blood pressure. And so they are providing us with all of the knowledge and information aspect of it. And so what we're doing is the library, with the help of the AHA, we ordered a few blood pressure monitor kits to have patrons be available to check out of the library. And so I have them in my office right now. I'm getting ready to put them out into the library. They're going to have like a little booklet where patrons can keep that and track their blood pressure, instructions on how to track their blood pressure, any referring resources that they can go to in case they have more questions, and the instructions on how to use the blood pressure monitor. And so that's really exciting. We're going to be having 5 available for checkout. And then there's going to be one that will be stationed on the second floor. Currently we're going through second floor renovations. So once the renovations are all done, we'll have that blood pressure monitor set up upstairs for patrons to use while they're in the library. And along with that, the American Heart Association provided like a training for all staff. So all staff is able to answer, you know, basic questions when it comes to blood pressure. And so that's like a really, really exciting partnership that, you know, ended in this collaboration and this project to be able to improve the health and increase the knowledge and education around this health aspect in the community.
What an exciting partnership. Are there other programs like that that you see coming up in the future that you're looking to create with other partners? And are there things that you think might be seasonal, like we're coming into summer, kids will be out of school? Do you see yourself intersecting with that population as, you know, the summer begins, and what those needs might be, or how you might intersect with the youth in our community?
Yeah, so the Youth Services Department has some amazing, amazing librarians who are already very, very involved with programming for youth and children, like for children and teens and tweens. And so they already do have a lot of really exciting programmings in the summer. And, you know, we do send out the weekly event forms with all of the programmings that we have. But I do think that there is a lot of room for potential partnerships in the future. So as of right now, there's nothing set in stone on my end, but part of what I do want to plan for the future with my role is to be more involved in programming. So finding those meaningful partnerships in the community, like I said before, so that we don't necessarily reinvent the wheel, but bring in agencies from the community to host different programs here at the library to, you know, fill some gaps and meet those needs and get the community involved of all ages. So that's definitely something in the works. But like I said, there's already so many amazing programs in the summer that the amazing librarians have put a lot of time and effort and passion in as well.
You've talked a little bit about social justice and that being also your passion and role to help us attain social justice. Do you see areas where you are actively doing that aside from your individual encounters with patrons? Do you have anything in mind that you look or aspire to doing?
Yeah, I mean, I honestly believe that when it comes to my role, I think my role really truly embodies what it means to be an advocate for social justice, because you know, social justice is a concept that all people should have equal access to health, wealth, well-being, privileges, opportunity. And so with my role at bringing that social justice lens, there's obviously still a lot of work to be done, but the things that are being done are with that lens so that we can make that inclusive environment. And so we know just from the get-go that, you know, anyone is welcome in the library. You don't have to have any requisites. You don't have to have a certain number in your bank account. Like, anybody can walk into the library. And so with that, we're already shedding those barriers that some people might find it difficult to go to certain social service agencies because of the negative stigmas attached. So just that in and of itself is already having that social justice lens of realizing that people of all backgrounds are coming into the library, and we don't truly know their story until we have the opportunity to talk to them and be able to figure that out. So I think that, I mean, with that, one of the things that I did when we first started is, I'll mention, before I started here, there was a social work intern from Carthage College. And when she was here, she was able to secure a grant. And that grant was going to go towards a new sensory room. And so when I was hired, that was kind of the project that I was given. You know, I was told, we received this grant from the previous social work intern that was here at the library. So your project is to, you know, create the sensory room and we'll have it open soon. And so with that, it was such an awesome experience because I do have background in working with occupational therapists. And so I took all of the knowledge that I had from that, on top of doing more research, that we were able to open that sensory room that now has had nothing but incredible feedback. People of all ages are using that room. And so with the sensory room, it's creating that equitable space for anybody who can use it. It's not just for children, it's also for adults, because research shows that a space like that, like a sensory space, is also beneficial for people with dementia, people that are experiencing PTSD symptoms, or maybe just somebody who doesn't have any mental health issues or anything, but just wants like a break, you know, like a little mental health break. And so with creating a space like that for everybody, it also sheds the barriers of mental health stigma that there might be, because anybody can really use the room. And so I think that that really reaches a wide audience. You know, there is a lot of furniture and equipment in that room that is specifically for children with sensory needs, but the room is made for the community. And I will add too that the room doubles as a nursing station. So any nursing parent is available to use the room as well. And there's like a privacy screen and everything. So that's just like one example, probably one of the bigger examples of something that I've done in my role with having a social justice lens to be able to provide people with that equal access to well-being and mental health stability and such, because as we know, like, spaces like that are far few in between sometimes in communities. And so I've even had patrons, you know, make the comment that the closest space similar to that is, I think, in Oak Creek, and a lot of spaces like that you have to pay to get in. And so even just the fact of the library being a space where you don't have to pay for books, you don't have to pay to attend the programs, and you don't have to pay to use the sensory room, that in and of itself as well is having that social justice lens.
Ashley, could you describe what a sensory room is? Can you describe the room for us? Because this is obviously radio. We don't have the benefit of actually looking at it. And can you tell us where within the library it's located?
Yeah, so the sensory room is located on the first floor, right by the desk of the Youth Services Department. So, I mean, in a short synopsis, the sensory room is just, it's a special room that's designed to develop a person's different senses, and it usually has like special lighting, sometimes music and different furniture and objects to be able to help develop mostly children's senses, like I said. But this room specifically, I really did want to have that equity lens of providing and making a space for not just children, but for people of all ages, because sensory rooms typically are geared more towards children with sensory needs. But I really wanted the space to be a cool and calming place for anybody who had a need to use the room. And sometimes, you know, I mentioned previously, you know, when we have a challenging patron or somebody is having a mental health crisis, no matter what their age is, that room is available to be used as a calming space for them. And that usually is very helpful. So, you know, the purpose of a sensory room, it's really a therapeutic space with a variety of equipment to be able to provide people with different types of calming experiences and sometimes personalized sensory input. So it helps them calm and focus and to be better prepared for learning or interacting and stuff. And so specifically for our sensory room, we have a lot of really cool stuff in there. One of my favorite things in the room is we have like a medium-sized like jellyfish tank. And a lot of people always ask if the jellyfish are real. I wish they were. So they're just plastic jellyfish, but they look 100% real, and it has LED lights in it. And so it's a water tank. And if you turn it on, the jellyfish just like smoothly like soar in the water. And it's just so like soothing to see the lights and the jellyfish. So that's one of my favorite things in the room. But we also have other fixtures of lights. We have the rocking chair for the nursing parents, but also anybody else who would want to use it. We also have a lot of fixtures on the walls for just sensory related input. Like we have like a bubble mirror, we have an LED kind of electronic toy that if you touch the squares, they light up in different colors. We have a lot of small fidgets and toys that kids can play with, but like I said, adults as well. We have kinetic sand. We have different other like visuals. So with the room, a lot of the equipment gears towards all of our senses, right? Because that's what a sensory room is for. And so there's a lot of things that are soothing for your eyes because, you know, the light fixtures, they're soothing for feeling and touching. And we also have two noise canceling headphones for if somebody is very oversensitized and has a sensory overload, the noise canceling headphones kind of help with that. And for the sense of smell, once a patron or a family or a group is done with their appointment in the sensory room, the staff would ask them if they would like essential oils. And so what we have is just little cups with a little cotton ball. And then the patron is able to pick out whatever, you know, essential oil they want. A few drops go in the cotton ball and then we put a lid on it. And I always like to tell patrons, you know, open this in your car or in your room and it'll make it smell really good. And so a lot of different essential oils have different things that they help with. And so a lot of, especially the kids, they love this because they're able to smell all the smells and they're able to test different ones out and then pick the ones that they want. So like I said, like the sensory room is really just a therapeutic space for that. And there's obviously a lot of equipment that I didn't name, but that's just some of like the bigger things. We also have like a fake fish tank as well. But I mean, I've had nothing but positive feedback on the room, and there's also opportunity for parents or even children or, you know, other community members to give feedback if there's something that they would like to see in their room. And we would see if there's the possibility of that. But it's really a really neat space. I think we opened around February of this year. So it's been open for a few months. And right now, it's available for 45-minute appointments on Mondays and Fridays. And we are now looking to schedule more days to have it opened now that the summer is coming. And the reason that we only had it for Mondays and Fridays so far is because it was such a new space. We wanted to make sure that the staff was comfortable running the room. We wanted to make sure that the community knew more about it. And also to like anticipate things that we didn't think of to anticipate. And so with like the planning and staff getting used to it, now we're extending the hours soon of that so that more people can take advantage of this really cool space.
That's wonderful. And how do people make an appointment, that 45-minute appointment? Can they do that online? Do they call the library? Do they just go in and hope perhaps it's available or sign up?
Yeah, so to make the appointments, you are able to call the library and then any staff member can make the appointment for you. So you would just call the main number, or if you have the number straight for the YSD department, the Youth Services Department, you can make an appointment with them. But like I said, any and all staff are trained to be able to make the appointment. So you could do it that way, but say like you are somebody who just came into the library and you didn't know that the sensory room was here and it's not being used, you are more than welcome to make an appointment right there and then as well.
Great. Let's jump back a little bit to working with the Department of Aging. We have a growing aging population. Are there specific services that you see other than health and benefits, which you've talked about, that you could foresee taking on to help create a more abundant, equitable life for them as they perhaps go through the aging process?
Yeah, so I personally found it very surprising too, but I've also had have experienced a growing number of, you know, requests for appointments or requests for helping them out with services for the elderly community. And so with that, you know, it's just a lot of connecting them with either the ADRC or just, you know, having just the ability to sit down with a patron and be able to walk through different types of resources with them. And, you know, a lot of the times there's a technological gap. So sometimes too, it's just meeting that need of, you know, I don't know how to do this on the computer. And sometimes that is all that they need. And so with coming to the library and having a service like that can also sometimes be life-changing. But with more like tangible resources, I do know that the ADRC, you know, I think they have a benefits specialist, they have an elder benefits specialist, they help with disability insurance, and they also help manage the Meals on Wheels, which I think is Monday through Friday. And so with that, I mean, they themselves have a lot of initiatives and a lot of programs that they have. But when talking about programming, there was a gap in that. And so one of our librarians actually saw the need for that and how that was such a big gap in our community. And so she actually took the initiative to create new senior programmings. And so this actually just started a few weeks ago. So there's a new senior program here at the library that's held on Thursdays at 10 a.m. And so she's been putting together a calendar for each month, which will be available at our reference desk and the checkout desks. And so that way all the staff are aware of the programs. And so with that, some of the programs include like a senior bingo series, crafting series. I believe there is a 60s classic movie coming up, like a viewing, and there's still a lot that are up in the air. And so with that, even just like that social factor of having a community and a sense of belonging with other people, sometimes that's also what is needed for that community. And so that's also something that the library is doing in that sense, which I think is very, very exciting.
That is exciting. That's good to hear. We've talked a lot about partnering with other organizations and people coming to the library. What about the library going out? I know that we have the bookmobile. Is there a time that you foresee you're traveling with something like the bookmobile or going out into the community where there might be people who would benefit from your knowledge and services, but who may not have yet discovered to come to the library?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So I know with the summer, there is a lot of opportunities for outreach. There's a lot of programmings and stuff with that, especially like with the schools. And I know that there is like a lot of, what would you call them? Like a lot of opportunities for community events that we usually have tables for and stuff. And so I know I like that you mentioned the bookmobile. It's actually been, you know, every day my to-do list is huge, but in the back of my mind, I've always had to, you know, travel with the bookmobile one day so that I can, you know, meet with the people that, and the kids especially, that use the bookmobile. I think it'd be very interesting because sometimes, you know, the people that, patrons that we're reaching with the bookmobile don't often come to the library sometimes. And so being able to reach that population as well would be critical and I think very helpful. But we also just purchased a new book bike. So that's also very exciting and another opportunity for more outreach into the community. So like I said, there's a lot of opportunities for that, I think. And I think that the more people that we reach, the better, because there's so many services here that sometimes people just aren't aware of. And so one of my goals as well of like in working in the future is to be able to reach more of the Latinx community. So I myself am a part of the Latinx community and I'm also bilingual. And that's one aspect of my role that I feel like I haven't been able to fully attain yet because I feel like I still have the opportunity to be able to build those meaningful relationships for agencies that serve the Latinx community. And so, you know, with that means also bringing in meaningful programming and building those relationships. I already do have some strong relationships with, like for instance, the healthcare network and other important people in the community to be able to reach that population. But I do think that there's a lot of opportunity for outreach for sure.
I'd like to back up just a little bit. Did you say there is a book bike?
Yes.
And so, could you describe what that is?
So I didn't know what a book bike was. And I'll also preface. So when I started my role here, I mentioned, you know, I graduated with my master's in social work. So I'm very new to the social work world, but I'm also incredibly, incredibly new to the library world in general. So there's a lot that I am learning every single day that I'm here. So with the book bike, it is a bicycle, but it has kind of like, how do I explain it? I feel like this is hard without having, you know, with it being radio, but it's kind of has like a trunk in the back. So it's basically like a tricycle. And then in the back, there's like the big, I don't know what you would call it, like, you know, like what movers have, the like little tiny little...
A trailer maybe?
Yeah, kind of like a little trailer. But yeah, so I mean, that book bike, I still don't know if we have decided who will be the chauffeur of the book bike yet, but I think that's just a really cool addition, especially in the summer, especially with kids, and just like having that presence in the community, I think is really, really neat.
That is. And then you had mentioned the connection to the Latinx community. I think that's fabulous. Do you find that perhaps the library has not garnered the attraction that it could from the Latinx community, maybe because there's a perception that there aren't many bilingual resources there for them, or and so it's just a matter of spreading the word about it? Or is it also kind of a dual role of building up bilingual resources for the Latinx community in the library? Could you kind of give us a sense of what you're thinking about right now?
Yeah, so I think this is definitely like a multifaceted issue. I mean, I would say yes to everything that you just mentioned. I do think that a big part of it is that the language barrier sometimes, and sometimes certain people in the community just don't know. And, you know, sometimes unfortunately that is the case, but, you know, there are some staff who are bilingual. I myself am bilingual. And so I think that, like you said as well, getting the word out more and marketing that to the community so that they are aware that these are resources available and these are people from like your background that can also help you out in your preferred language. And so I think that's very, very important and empowering for that person. And I also do think that a lot of it also has to do with those meaningful collaborations and partnerships. And so with that, of building those relationships, we can bring programs here or we can do outreach so that we can meet more people. And an example of that is I recently collaborated with the Alzheimer's Association to do a program here, a presentation here at the library. And it was a Spanish program of understanding Alzheimer's. So it's just like a basic introduction for people to better understand Alzheimer's, dementia. And so just having that conversation and really providing that education that a lot of people sometimes don't have. And we marketed it, we posted it all in Spanish. And so the presenter came and nobody showed up. And so when I was talking to the presenter from Alzheimer's Association about this, they weren't surprised. They said that this is something that happens commonly. And so it's something that we definitely have to work together as a community to try to bridge that gap and see what are we missing? Like what do we need to do to be able to reach these people? Because it's not that the need isn't there, because we know that the need is there, but how do we better reach them so that we can provide them with these resources?
Well, initially I tell you, Ashley, I think there is a wonderment about your role as the first social worker for the Racine Public Library. And in this time, you have just given us such a plethora of things that you've been involved in to help make us a more equitable community for everyone so that they can enjoy life to the fullest in Racine. That it's just splendid to have you part of the community and doing what you're doing. I thank you for spending your time here with us this morning. If you could just tell us really briefly how people could reach you and when you're at the library.
Yes, of course. And I do want to say I do thank you for giving me the opportunity, and like a part of like I'm saying is, you know, reaching the community and getting the word out. And this is the perfect way to do that as well, so that the more people that know of the services, the better. Because I mean, my goal here is really to be that resource referral and be that person to be able to help people and at whatever part in their journey of life they're on. So I am at the library Monday through Friday. And so I am available for drop-ins if I'm available and if I have the free time. But I do have actual drop-in times that I have scheduled that I only use to schedule for meeting with patrons. That is Wednesdays in the afternoon and evening from 4 to 7 p.m. and Thursday mornings from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. But like I said, I am here Monday through Friday. And if those times don't work for somebody that needs my help or anything, they are more than welcome to call me to be able to schedule a time outside of that. And my phone number is 262-321-9458. And I can also be emailed at socialworker@racinelibrary.info.
Well, wonderful. Thank you so much for spending your time with us. I'd like to revisit with you sometime in the near future to see how things unfold. Have a wonderful rest of your time at the library.
Thank you so much. Appreciate it.
You've been listening to Community Matters. All programs are archived at WGTD.org. Click shows. This is WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva.